Okay. We'll start off with a beautiful vort from the Sfas Emes that points out something very interesting. There are three Yamim Tovim, three Regalim. There are the Gimel Regalim, Minatara. We're not counting Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. They're not, because they're not Regalim. They're not from the they're Yemei Hadin, right? Days of Judgment. But three times we go like we read in this week's parasha already. First time we have the Shalosh Regalim already mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim. There's Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Right? And they're on the spring summer side of the calendar. And we have two Yamim Tovim Midrabanan, which are on the fall winter side of the calendar. We have Hanukkah and we have Purim. So I'm adding some words to him because anyone who's acquainted with the Sfas Emes style, he writes very short and very cryptic. So, but you take a look at the difference between the warm half of the calendar of spring summer, as opposed to the cold half of the calendar, from Tishrei until Nisan. So what ushers in the warm half of the calendar is Chodesh Nisan, Chodesh Ha'aviv, Aviv as in Aleph Beis, which is the correct order of of the alphabet, Aleph Beit Gimel Dal. Right. What ushers in the change in seasons? Tishrei. And what is a Tishrei? Tuf, Shin, Resh. Going in receding order. Tuf, Shin, Resh. And as the Sfarim explained, there's the half of the year where everything is straight. God, gives, right? And we receive. And that's the bounty of the spring and summer months. That's when things start growing, everything's blooming. That's the really in many ways the brighter half of the calendar, right? And that's when God gives and we receive, and also God gives and we receive also is also reflected by God initiates Yitzias Mitzrayim. He took us out, right? It was up to him. All right. And, gradually we participate more, but still, even Shavuos, he gave us the Torah. So he's on the giving side, we're on the receiving side. All right. Sukkos also, the Chag of Sukkos, Chag Asif, such joy that we are gathering in all the bounty that we got in course of these 6 months. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's very much, enjoying and celebrating what God's giving. Right, but on the cold half of the month, of the annual calendar, right, from Tishrei until Nisan, right, everything is contracting. Right, dark times. The trees lose their leaves. Things are not growing. This half of the year. Right? So, God's not giving. So what's the avoda? It's our job to give back. Give back. He gives us from Nisan until Tishrei. From Tishrei until Nisan, we give back. Right? He gave us bounty during those times. And we're living off that bounty, and we have to serve him now with what he gave us. And now parallel to that is the time of the Yomim Tovim Derabbanan. Right? The three regalim he gave us. And also connected how he was active. Right? Historically, Tzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, Sukkos, Anoni Akod, these things he did for us. And just like he did it for us, he gave us and he mandated these holidays. Right. What are the Yom Tovim Derabbanan? Yom Tovim Derabbanan are that first of all, we instituted them. But why do we institute them? Because of what we did. What we did. Right? Hanukkah. Right? We fought back against the Greeks. Right? And even Purim. We did tshuva, and Esther, Ivanka, whatever, did her thing, right? 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 Yeah. Right? Right? Am Yisrael took an active role, and these chagim, we instituted. So now take a look at an amazing thing. And everything I'm telling you, the Sfasema said this in three lines. This is just what I'm decoding from it. Right? There are mirror images of each other. The Yomim Tovim Doraisa and the Yomim Tovim Dorabanan. This is what God did. God did and God mandated. This is what we did and we created ourselves. We created the Yomim Tovim. That it's going in receding order. Chag HaSukkos, the last of the Yomim Tovim, Doraisa, the last in the cycle. All right, so that's parallel to Hanukkah. And for two reasons, there's deeper and deeper reasons, but two easy reasons that you could see, like that, is everyone knows the famous Shita of Beis Shammai. We don't pass like Beis Shammai, but everyone knows that Beis Shammai holds, you're supposed to light on the first night of Hanukkah 8 candles, and then 7, and then 6, and 5. He says, where does he learn out from? From the Korbanos of Sukkos. 13 bulls, 12 bulls, right? That Keneged Pariachak, just like by Sukkos, you're supposed to. But also we have something interesting, the idea of Hidur Mitzvah, right? That, most of the examples of Chazal, of the din of Hidur Mitzvah, add an extra third, add up to the base price to make the mitzvah nicer. It's learned out of Sukkos, right? It's Hidur Mitzvah by the Arba Minim. You should try to get a very nice esrog, and there's halacha shochach to spend a little bit extra, up to one third. So lulav na'at, sukkah na'at, the examples that Chazal give is, but also make the sukkah very beautiful, and the arba nirsha, and that's just why we decorate the sukkah. These are all dinim from the Gemara. These are the textbook examples of Hidur Mitzvah, and from there it's learned out to other dinim, right? And that is also by Chanukah. The whole idea of, lighting one, and then two, and then three, is all mahadrin min ha-mahadrin. It's all Hidur Mitzvah. And we could go on and on, but it's not our topic. But it's just showing that the mirror images, so the last chag of the Doraisa cycle is, it's parallel in the Drabant cycle, is the first chag. They're going in mirror images. Purim, right? Purim is actually parallels Shavuos, right? A famous Gemara, everyone knows, God held the mountain on us like a barrel by Shavuos. We were forced into this stuff. Whatever. Why can't we appeal it, and ask for the Torah to be taken off of us because it was given by dress? Come on, dream on, it won't happen. But, won't happen, right? But we don't even have a claim anymore. God, why'd you hold the mountain over us? Held us over a barrel. Had the mountain like a barrel over us. We don't have a claim anymore, the Gemara says, because on Purim, Hadar Ki Blua, we re-accepted the Torah out of love. They didn't consult us at the time, but the Jewish people in the days of Achashverosh re-accepted the whole Torah out of love. So, there's no more no moral claims anymore that God forced us into it. So that's Purim. Hanukkah, Sukkos, Purim, Shavuos, and says the Sfas Emes, right? We're still waiting for the Chag that parallels Pesach, right? We're still waiting for it. And that's going to be the Chag of Mashiach. That's going to be the Derabbanan. Right.
No, but will it be Tisha B'Av? Because Tisha B'Av will transform into
hasn't happened yet.
No, but I'm saying...
You never know. Because a Chakalo B'chol Yom Sheyavo doesn't necessarily have to be in Nisan. Okay. So the third Derabbanan Chag will be the parallel of Pesach. Kimei Tzeischa Me'eretz Mitzrayim Arenu Niflos. God, the Navi says that the times of Mashiach, like the days that you left Egypt, I will show you wonders.
Right.
And that's going to be Be'ezer Hashem B'mehera B'yameinu, the third Chag D'Rabbanan, which will be the twin of Pesach. Right? B'mehera B'yameinu. But it's essentially how it goes, and it's mirror images. It goes top down, bottom up. Right? So Pesach Shavuot Sukkos, Hanukkah, Purim, and then yet yearning for the parallel of the Chag of Pesach. All right, so So with those introductory remarks, there's two crazy things that that Purim and Shavuos have in common. They're both historically inaccurate. In a sense, what I mean to say, we don't celebrate the holiday when the event really happened. That is the two crazy things about these two chagim. Right? Purim is easier to explain because the Megillah already points it out. When was the Vina? What was the, you know, the big nes is Vina Fohu. Vina Fohu. Right? Asha Yushal Atul Ayudim, Beom Asha Sivru Ayudim Lishlopem, Vina Fohu. The Vina Fohu was on the 13th. That was the day that came up in Haman's lots, right, to exterminate the Jews. Right? And that was a big Vina Fohu. We killed them instead of them killing us. We don't celebrate the 13th. We celebrate the day after. Vinoch Bar Basar. What? The Vina Fohu was on the 13th. We fast on that day. Tanis Esther. That was the big Vina Fohu. We are, you know, and the people in Shushan, so they had to fight on the 14th. Right? So they celebrate the 15th. Purim is like one day off. Right? You're celebrating the day after.
Yeah, but the battle isn't the time to celebrate because
that's the Vina Fohu.
But we're not sure of the outcome until it's over. I mean, there was still a certain sakana.
That's the miracle. The miracle was that was the miracle. Right? So that should be the day that the day that is instituted as, you know, maybe in that generation they weren't drinking while they were fighting. That's bad. You shouldn't drink when you drive, and you shouldn't drink when you're in battle. And so, I get it. That you're not. When you're instituting now Purim for further generations. Why did you institute the day that they had to rest? Right? I'm sure the Jews had to rest, after Yetzias Mitzrayim also. Right? You know, they were on the move on the 15th of Nisan. Right, they're on the move, right? Maybe they got some rest, afterwards. You don't institute the day you rest. You institute the day, that commemorates the event. Right? This is already from the Megillah that since they were Vinoach Bar Basar, which is a very interesting verb, by the way. Vinoach Bar Basar. I'm going to get back to that verb. That verb is used extensively when explaining what happened on the 14th and the 15th. They were Vinoach. Right? And we're going to talk about that. Right, but first, I want to point out that what were Chazal thinking that they commemorated the party that they made in that generation? Now, instead, in that generation, they partied the day after because the day before they were in battle. But when you're making now a Chag, you should commemorate the big Vina Fohu. The big Vina Fohu was the day before. That was it. They're supposed to be killed. Instead, they killed.
When was the day that Esther asked to continue killing?
So that was on the 13th. She asked that Yinosin Gam Mochar La Yehudim, I want you to give now one just for the Jews in Shushan. Right. One more day. So on the 13th, she asked for the 14th, for the 14th for the Jews of Shushan.
Right. And they actually fought on the...
So the Jews in Shushan fought 2 days running. 13th, 14th, and they rested on the 15th, right? Right, the Jews, everyone just fought on the 13th and they were rested on the 4th, but they made a chag out of the day of rest, not the day of...
Can you say that the total victory happened on the 14th? Because that had significance, it's tremendous significance, the requesting to eradicate...
Yeah, so why don't we just make the 14th for everybody? So now Shushan Purim, which is about their day of rest. Right, the Purim is about commemorating the day of rest after the miracle. The day of rest becomes the holiday, not the day of the event. It's the day after. Right, it really should be understood. Now this is my question.
We never celebrate when we kill people. We never celebrate. Even in Pesach, we do dance for a day or we take away...
Fine, so when you wait before you get totally stoned, a few drops out of the cups, for the...
Is that considered the only...
Yeah, well, when we get saved, when we get saved, we commemorate. The Malachi Ashores, they were not allowed to say Shiran Shvi Shal Pesach, but we celebrate Shvi Shal Pesach. We don't celebrate the day after. I'm sure on Shvi Shal Pesach, we're on the move, right? Now, of course, this was all mandated by the Torah, so we have no say in it anyway. Right, you know, God said, you know, the day that you were, that you crossed Yom Suf, you know, you probably were on the run, right? That's the day you celebrate for all generations, right? So why were Chazal, why did they think otherwise? And they instituted the day that they rested became our festive day. You understand that they had to rest that day because they were in battle, but for all generations, you make the celebration on the day of the Vinafochu. Vinafochu was the 13th, right?
Was that considered the only
Nisim,
just on the day that we battle?
Right, but any other Nisim that there were prior to, happened earlier, like the Gzeira of Haman was during Pesach, as we know, and the 3-day fast of Esther in that generation, there was actually they didn't do a Seder night. Vayavar Mordechai, that you know the Sanhedrin used their authority to exempt Am Yisrael from the mitzvah saseh of the Leil HaSeder, right? And Haman was hung first day Chol HaMoed, what we would call second day Pesach in Chutz La'aretz, and then then also on Sivan, you know, two months later, is when the letters went out, repealing Haman, Obamacare and Haman's Gzeira, and right, and then empowering Am Yisrael to do to the liberals what needs to be done. What?
Haman was
hung on Chol HaMoed. What? Chol HaMoed Pesach. First day Chol HaMoed. Second day Yom Tov and Chutz La'aretz. So all the other Nisim happened. Any other happened earlier. Nothing new in the story. No turns of events happened on the 14th and 15th. Those were the days that the Jews partied. Right. After, so I was like, no, we're going to institute that as the Chag, not any of the other milestones along the way. And that's what you understand. You know, the day that they partied, that's the Chag. And that's what I mean, you understood. Now, it's very interesting because, we have the same problem with Shavuos, which is, as we just explained, is Purim's twin in a certain way. Because we re-accepted the Torah in days of Achashverosh willingly, that Shavuos has something about it that, when we used to sanctify the new moon based on, Adam coming and testifying to the new moon before we had to set calendar, Shavuos did not have a set date. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that Shavuos is on the 6th of Sivan. There is no date attached to Shavuos. It is the 50th day. It is the 50th day of the Omer. Meaning, why don't we count it? Well, the Torah said Tisbara Yom. All right, fine. But it is the 50th day. So now, and the Gemara says this, black on white, that Shavuos could sometimes come out as early as the 5th of Sivan, right? Or as late as the 7th of Sivan. If there would be a 2-day Rosh Chodesh Iyar and a 2-day Rosh Chodesh Sivan, it would come out on the 5th of Sivan, right? If you have only one day, it would come out as late as the 7th. By us, it always comes out on the 6th because it's very simple. 2-day Rosh Chodesh Iyar, 1-day Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So like clockwork, it always comes out like the 6th, but we have a set calendar, there's always 2 days Rosh Chodesh Iyar and always just 1 day Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Right, but when that could change every year, depending on when the witnesses show up to testify to the new moon. Right, it could come out. It's an amazing thing. Shavuos doesn't have a regular calendar date. Right? But here's the bigger question. We are definitely keeping it on the wrong day numerically. Definitely. Right? Because the Gemara says in the Masechta Shabbos and the Sugyas that talk about Matan Torah, the Jews left Mitzrayim on a Thursday. Right? It was a Thursday that year. Pesach, year one, was on a Thursday. And the Gemara says, everyone agrees, both Rabbi Yossi and the Rabban, who had a machlokas, what was the date of Matan Torah? Was it the 6th of Sivan, 7th of Sivan? Not that it makes a difference, because, Shavuos is the 50th day, but what was the date that year? So it's a machlokas, right? Was it the 6th of Sivan, 7th of Sivan? But the Kuliyama, everyone admits, B'Shabbos and the Tol Yisrael. Everyone agrees it was Shabbos. So count the days. From Thursday to Shabbos, 7 weeks later, it's 51 days. Mm. It will just be 50, and Torah will be given on Friday. It's 51 days, definitely. That, ha ha. All right, I'm going home now. All right, definitely, you know, we keep always Shavuos on the 50th day of the Omer. Yeah, like the Torah said, which Torah said. Right? It's just historically not accurate. Right? Because the Torah was given on the 51st day after they left Egypt. Right. So it's an interesting commonality between Purim and Shavuos that I want to explore. That the day that commemorates the event is not seemingly aligned with the events, although it's not the same reason by both of them. But, you know, we'll start with Shavuos to make things a little bit easier, because the answer over there is a lot easier. And it'll be a stepping stone to where we want to get to as far as Purim. Purim is built on that, just one step, a little bit more complicated. All right? Both of these chagim have to do with the Torah. Right? The initial giving of the Torah, and then the reacceptance of the Torah in the days of Ahasuerus. Like we said, that's why we... If we had any complaints and we were forced into it, we have no complaints ever since Purim. We waived that complaint. We reaccepted the Torah with love, willingly. Right. So now the gift of the Torah is to give us a connection with the infinite. Now that's the amazing gift. You know, give Dveikus and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What we, you know, that which we've learned about extensively in Derech Hashem, it's all about Dveikus and He who is infinitely, you know, infinitely ahead of us. Right? Infinitely ahead of anything. Right. So something is infinitely away. Right? Get this straight. It is infinite distance away. Right? I take 10 steps closer. 10 steps in that direction. So it's infinitely north. I take 10 steps due north. Am I any closer?
No.
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 All right. I take 49 steps in that direction. Am I any closer? No. All right. No. It's infinite. All right. So what is this nonsense that with the days of the Omer, right? The 49 days of the Omer, we prepare, right? And now, we're ready for Matan Torah. It's infinitely away.
Because Hashem had to come in our direction to meet us?
Without getting, so we don't have to break it down so much. Answer, it's a gift. Answer, it's a gift. That's the answer. Now, Karin Brochel said, you know, do whatever you can. At the end of the day, it's a gift. Right? And that's why, you know, this is sort of the depth of it, of why the Torah had to be given by force. Right? Because there's no such thing as reaching out and taking it. Right? It's God's divine wisdom. The Torah is like, you know, is the divine intelligence. That's infinitely away. So, you know, there's no such thing as, you know, becoming, like, really worthy, right? Or it's within grasp that you could say that, you know, yeah, I opted for it. What do you mean you opted for it? All right, so what? It's very nice. We said Na'aseh V'Nishma, right? But it's a lot bigger than you are, right? That you could say that you opted for it or you reached out for it. All right, so, of course, it's considered to be a big praise that Am Yisrael didn't reject the Torah like the other nations. But it is infinitely away. Right? So, and that's why to illustrate that, you know, part of the is that the idea that the Torah was given by force. I mean, it's up to God to give it to you. Don't think you could reach out and take it. Right? It's infinitely away. Right? So it means that, you know, having Torah on earth, having Torah belonging to us, it's a miracle. Right? So it makes no difference. You give the Torah, you know, it's a miracle from God. Right? It makes no difference if he gave the Torah, you know, after 100 days or after 50 days or after 2 days. It's all equally a miracle. right? That Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know, gave us the Torah. It means Torah, you know, because it's above time and space, because it's not like it's 50 paces that way. Walk there and you will find it. Or it's X amount of years away. It's not, you know, it's infinitely away. Right? And the amazing gift of Shavuos is where infinite meets finite, and it's up to God to pull that off. He could pull that off whenever he wants. He could do it whenever he wants. And that's what it means. It doesn't have a set calendar date. All right? Because, you know, the idea of a calendar, Am Yisrael sets the calendar. Okay? The Beis Din sets the calendar. All right? As if what? We make Shavuos? We don't make Shavuos. God makes Shavuos. So now here's an interesting thing to look into. I'm not poskening the halacha over here, but it's something very interesting. You know, God forbid, if we ever lose the calendar, the luach that we have now, like I said, we prove that it no longer works. Right? I mean, God forbid. Right. So, and now that the Rambam has an interesting proviso in the Sefer HaMitzvos, not everyone agrees with him. He says if there be no Jews living in it, no community in Israel, then the luach would lose its legal validity. Because as it were, the yishuv, the community in Israel, is considered to be the living extension of the Sanhedrin that empowered the luach. Right? And he says, Ram has halacha that not everyone agrees with, that if the Eretz would be empty and have no Jewish community there, the luach would fall out of use. And so God forbid something like that happens. You know what the halacha would be, right? There'll be no Yomim Tovim anymore. There'll be Shabbos, because Shabbos is not a date. It's a day of the week. So Shabbos there would be no Rosh Hashanah, you know, Sukkot, nothing. No Pesach. You know, don't get too happy, right? It's not going to happen, right? It's not going to happen. Not going to happen, right? Won't happen, right? But theoretically, it wouldn't be Pesach, right? So, you know, the interesting question that I had, you know, it should never be L'maisa, is if we had Pesach already, and then the calendar would fall out of use, will we still have Shavuos? I think we would. It's not a date. It's 50 days. Just 50 days. Now, of course, I'm not good about, you know, I don't think it's consequential to having a Rosh Chodesh Iyar or a Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So in that way, it's sort of like Shabbos. It's like a day. It's like just like it's a day, Shabbos, God makes Shabbos. Right? Yes.
But at a certain point, we started using, you know, the set calendar, I think, in the time of Hillel. So
Hillel the second. Hillel the second was an Amora.
Why would this statement of the Rambam still hold if there were, that there would be no Jews if we already had a set calendar? What is the.
No, he's saying, theoretically.
Jews have to be in Israel in order
to be a continuation of the Sanhedrin that empowered the calendar.
Okay.
There should be a living representation of that Sanhedrin. You know, so the community of Eretz Yisrael is like their shluchim there.
Right.
Okay. So that's why Shavuos doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to mirror the historical event that, you know, that we said the historical event was 51 days after they left Egypt. Because the Matan Torah is not something contained within time, because it's infinitely away, and it's a gift from God. Right? And that's, you know, okay, so. So now there's going on the depth that Purim was a day of reaccepting the Torah. All right, and it's furthermore, the Rambam, I believe we mentioned this in previous years, the Rambam says at the very end of Hilchos Megillah, not everyone agrees with the Rambam, but the Rambam takes a Chazal very literally, that in the future, right, all the other books of Nach are going to fall out of use. We're only going to have Chumash, Megillas Esther, and Torah Shebaal Peh. And that really, that, you know, that Megillas Esther is like on par with Chumash, like on par with, you know, the Torah itself. You know, Nevi'im and Ksum don't have the same kedusha as Chumash. Not in fact that, you know, they're a lower kedusha. You can't put a Navi on top of a Chumash, but also their halachic standing is different. We cannot learn halacha from the Nevi'im and Ksuvim. You bring a proof from a Pasuk in Navi that the halacha ought to be such and such. Right? It doesn't mean anything unless unless the way it is that it's a historical record that this is how the Jews used to do it, but like to derive, like with a Kal V'Chomer or a Gzeir Shava, not actionable to learn out Halacha. Halacha can only be learned out of Chumash. Divrei Halacha mi Divrei Kabbalah lo yalfina. We cannot learn out Halacha from Divrei Kabbalah, from words of Nevuah, only from the Chumash. Now, we can only use it as either as a lexicon to help us understand what a word means, which might have reflection back on Chumash, or alternatively, if there's a historical record, like, for instance, Kinyan Chalipin. You know, the historical record for Kinyan Chalipin is in Megillas Rus. He gave a shoe for a field. It's a Chalipin. So we use it as a historical record that there is such a thing as Kinyan Chalipin. It's not that it's being derived. It's just a record.
Also, what about the from Ezra and Nehemiah about the status of Jews determined through the mother? Isn't that where we learn it from? Because he sent the ones who had intermarried, they sent the children away.
No, so like I said, you know, it's only useful.
No, it's historical. I understand.
So okay, fine. Right, fine. But of course, it always has to shtim with the Chumash, obviously.
Right.
But it means that Megillas Esther, right, is being put on par with Chamisha Chumshei Torah, which was written with the highest level of Nevuah, Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah, and is the one book that, you know, the only book in Torah Shebichsav that we could use to derive halacha from, you know, in the broad sense of the word, derivation, you know, with the Midas Shatron, the Dreshbem, etc., etc. And putting Megillas Esther on that level, that's amazing, right? It is amazing. No, and we're going to talk about that.
Why?
All right. I don't have a question. Why? Yeah, so it's not just that, oh, we reaccepted the Torah in the days of Achashverosh. It's got to be a deeper connection. Right. Another thing that, you know, Torah does, that which is a function of the aspect of the Torah that's unknowable. Right. We say on the one hand, Torah is a gift, and we can understand it. Because it's from the infinite intelligence, there's aspects of Torah we don't understand. Right? And now, what's one of the prime examples? Torah Aduma. Right? Now here's the amazing catch. You know, and you understand why Torah Aduma is one of the prime examples, because it tells its own story. Right? You know, why is it that we, even after God gave us the Torah as a gift, even after He gifted us the Torah, we still can't understand the Torah fully, because our intelligence is tainted. Right? Why is our intelligence tainted? Well, two major historical events. We had one event that we got out of, but we went back into with another event, that being the Chet Eitz Hadas, Tovara, that changed our mentality, tainted our minds, right? Das Tovara, good and evil, are now hopelessly connected. Das Nefesh Chaim says this. Milashin Das in the biblical sense. You know, we're mixed up. Tov and Ra are mixed up. We don't have clarity. You know, we don't see things absolutely anymore, right? And together with that came mortality.
Right.
But when that happened, we also became mortal. And you know, Yom Achol Chamimeno Mos Tamus. The two go together. Because our minds are adulterated with evil, that adulteration also is what makes us mortal and susceptible to death. Now, by Ma'amad Har Sinai, we actually got out of it. You saw from the Har Sinai, Pascha Zu Masan, we actually got out of it, and temporarily, from Ma'amad Har Sinai until the Chet Ha'egel, during those 40 days or so, we were immortal. Pascha Zu Masan, you know, to say that when God initially gifted us the Torah, He purified us. And that's also represented by the fact that everyone knows we dropped dead and came back to life. It's as if we died, got the evil out of us, like we learned the Derech Hashem, that we have to die for our own good to get the evil out, and then be reanimated only with the good matter, not the bad matter. That happened at Ma'amad Har Sinai in condensed form. Dropped dead, got the evil out, and we're reanimated, and now we could like fully absorb the entirety of the Torah. Right, okay, right, because we had died and come back to life. We actually died and had Tchias HaMesim, and if we could have held the level, you know, we've been on the fast track to Olam Haba. We've been on the fast track. It would be like living in the world post-resurrection, fast track, do your mitzvahs, within a few years, you know, the whole cosmos has changed. Right, then came the Chet Ha'egel, and, you know, and the Yetzer made a comeback, you know, and God was going to kill us, and give the Torah to Moshe, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu interceded on our behalf, and we got spared and got the Torah anyway, but, you know, But nonetheless, you know, it's not the same. We can't fully wrap our heads around the Torah the way we could have if we would have stayed pure. So now, what does Parah Aduma do? Two things, right? Two things we know about Parah Aduma. First of all, it takes off the impurity of death. Death made a comeback. Right? So Parah Aduma is anti that. Another thing that we know from Rashi in Parshas Chukas is that Parah is the mother of the ego. Right? And Rashi gives a metaphor. The kid poops in the mother's king's palace. Mother's got to clean it up. Right? Mother's got to clean up. So the Parah is, it was also a kapora for cheta ego. And these are not too disjointed. They go together. Because cheta ego brought back the sin of Adam. Right, and totally contaminated us and our minds and made us mortal again. Right, and that's why Parah Aduma is there to clean, take off Tumas Meis, and it's also, as a korban, it is a kapor for the Cheta Ego. So it takes away the effect of the Cheta Ego, and it also is a kapor for the sin. Right, so now you can understand, we can't wrap our heads around Parah Aduma because it's above us. Right, because it comes from the higher level of immortality, cleaning up our mess, but our mentality is in the mess. Moshe Rabbeinu, who never got corrupted by Cheta Ego, because he wasn't even on earth when it happened, he was totally uninvolved, he understands Parah Aduma. His intelligence is on par with it, because he's untainted. So to him, Parah Aduma makes perfect sense. To us, it doesn't, because it's from the beyond to clean us up, but we're the ones being clean. You know, we're not, right, until the future. Right, until the future, that gradually, you know, the Torah, which is called Eitz Chaim L'Machaziba, is gradually going to clean us up, step by step, right? And eventually we are destined to reattain, like we learned this all in Derech Hashem, we're going to fix the sin of Adam in the times of Mashiach, and then we're going to have, you know, Tchias HaMesim, you know, be rebuilt with good matter alone, and the Torah is what takes us there, right? God, you know, left us the Torah, even though it's beyond us, for the Torah to drag us up, right?
But the Tamei is at Jeholim, and that's wonderful. I mean, the Tahir is at Tmeir. But how do you explain the Tahir is at
Tmeir? All right. The Tamei is at Torah. Right, that's correct. First, that's what we can't wrap our heads around, but I'll explain it. This has to do with Purim. Very good. Excellent, Mrs. Wien. Has to do with Purim. You have to understand that, you know, the evil is not, there's not two gods, a good God and a bad God. You know, God forbid, that Judaism says one God, monotheism. We got to understand that everything that's bad also comes from God. That's what it means, that this Parah Aduma that cleans you up, it also defiles the pure. You got to understand that the bad comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. Not an easy concept to get your head around, right? And it's all tied together. Yeah, you're on the right track. You could finish the shiur now. You know, no, you really, no, you got... No, you're not supposed to. That's the point. You're not supposed to. That's the point. But now, you have to understand that even the evil comes from God. I'm going to get there in a second. Okay? Yeah. So the Torah, you know, gradually.
That's the evil. What's Matame, the Tahorim, is the evil aspect that comes from Hashem, and what's Matame, the Tumim, is the positive aspect that comes from Hashem.
You understand? It all comes from the same God. So I got to understand it. You have to understand that everything comes from one God. Not easy thing to get your head over. It's easy to say, not easy to really. Mm-hmm. And that's, we're going to get to that.
Parah Aduma raises a whole question of, you know, Tzadik Baral over Rosh Hashanah. So that's what this is answering.
Well, not answering. Steers into.
It's showing that it all comes from the same. The Parah Aduma, according to what you said, I heard this from a different shir, that it raises the question of Tzadik Baral over Rosh Hashanah. But what you're saying, that the Parah Aduma is a representation of what we perceive as evil and pure and good coming from the same source, it's the antidote or the answer on some level, as much as we can understand it, right, to that question of Tzadik, you know, Varalo and Rosh Hashanah.
Yes. No, but not answers. It steers into the issue, because it's not something we can ignore, because we're monotheists and we have to believe one God for everything, right? So it's an issue that we're forced to face, even though we can't get our heads around it, right? But except on Purim, we'll get there. We'll get it, right? Step by step. The Very strange and disheartening Gemara in Eruvin. It says that for 2.5 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel couldn't agree on the following philosophical question. Nochlo l'adam shenivra mishenivra. That would have been easier. Better just not to have been created. Yeah. Better not to have been created. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel went at it for 2.5 years. And then finally, at the end of 2.5 years, Nimnu v'gamru, they voted on it and they assembled the Sanhedrin. You know, the problem with Yahweh was people don't realize the big split between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel was a tremendous tragedy that they didn't have a unified Sanhedrin anymore. But every once in a while, the Chazal said Nimnu v'gamru. They made a census. They pulled together. Right, they all got together and they voted. Right, so the Nimnu v'gamru. Nochulam shall never mission ever. That's it. It's paskin, right? I don't know why did they have to paskin this, but they paskin it, right? It is better to have not been created, seemingly. And an interesting verb or adjective is noach. Noach lo la'adam shalonivra misha nivra. Been more comfortable to have not been created than to have been created. Nimnu v'gamru. So they finally came together and they agreed on it. Nochulam shalonivra misha nivra. Noach, which is an interesting verb, or adjective or adverb, right? It'd been noach. More pleasant.
It means not ultimately better for them not to have been created.
Okay, excellent.
It's easier.
Yes, something which needs to be understood. That's Chazal choose their words carefully. Now, you can't say, and now that, if you say that, it means tov lo l'adam shalom. It would have been better not to have been created, right? Because then you're calling God cruel. So it can't be. It can't, right? It cannot be, right? That they were saying would have been better, as in it would have been greater goodness to have not been created and created. Right? That would be calling God cruel, right? It goes against what we learned in Derech Hashem, second chapter. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's whole ratzon is lehitiv, right? To bestow goodness, right? And that's why he created the world, right? And now that, life is so hard, you got to choose and got to struggle because that's the best. Because that way it's not nama de kisuf, it's not bread of shame. Right? So what's the Gemara talking about? Right? And it said that they were able to agree on this. Nochlaram shalom nivra misha nivra. Answer is, as people here began to say, which might explain the cryptic, term used, Noach. Now, Noach literally means comfort. Right? Doesn't necessarily mean good. A lot of things might be comfortable, but they're not good. So it's very, very interesting in the Balatanya. The Balatanya has a has short Biurim on Chazal. It's not, it's printed in a 2-volume set. And he says something very interesting that's very ra'ui to be mizbonin in. He says there are different types of ideas that a person could have. Right? There are ideas that the neshama, apprehends. There's the soul intelligence. And there's body intelligence, what your brain understands, what the biochemical brain can understand. So he says something over there, I'm reading a little bit into it, because it's like I said, these are very short ma'amarim. He's like one liners, two liners. He says Noach is mitzad the guf, right? Simple gray matter intelligence, right? And it's something very deep in that, because the truth is like this, right? When we prefer a scientific theory over another, Aristotle said about gravity, everything's just coming to its natural place, right? And Newton came and said that's stupid. No. Body's a tract, right? Then came Einstein and said, no, it's not that either. It's like, the bodies curve space and make these grooves that, things are rolling in, right? All right. No one really knows what gravity is. The thing is like this. If you go with Aristotle's approach, you have a few kashas. You have X amount of things that don't work out. If you go with Newton, you have less kashas. It's no more noach. The idea sits, better on the head, right? If you go with Einstein, you have either more subtler questions that come up, not questions that me and you would think of, but big physics, those questions are those questions aren't questions anymore, right? But it could be that Aristotle was right in the first place. You don't really know. Just, you know, we have these questions that, so it's, we're uncomfortable with the theory. We're uncomfortable, right? We don't really know what the truth is. These theories are more comfortable. There's a, right? I had a friend of mine knew a person that won every single contest in writing an original Chiddush Torah, made a small fortune in competing in every single contest, right? Because he had a trick, right? And the judges didn't, you know, the big rabbonim that used to sit and judge a shtickle, they didn't chop that it was a trick, right? And he made, you know, he used to find, you know, any time there's a competition to write a shtickle Torah and something, he would enroll and win, right? He had a method, a no-fail method. It's like this. He would pose 500 disparate kashas. Not one had anything to do with the other, right? Which is amazing, right? 500 different kashas. He would create a yesod, right? An einfall, an idea, a creative idea, right? That had no basis in any text, right? No basis in any text. There's like no Gemara that would substantiate this idea. It had no basis in rational thought. Some of the idea was totally crazy, right? No basis in text, no basis in rational thought. But if it is true, it answers all 500 kashas. If it is true, right? It answers all 500 kashas. That's pretty impressive, right? So the judges didn't realize, thought the man's brilliant, right? They realized that, because how does the mind work, right? You first used to have 500 kashas, right? Right? Now you have only one kasha, the whole etzem idea, right? But you're up by 499, right? You're up by 499, because now there's only one thing that's bothering you, that the etzem yisod might not be true, right? But the mind, the shallow mind, you're up by 499, right? So he won every contest. He didn't realize that he was making fun of them. Right? Created a total nonsense idea. But if it is true, it answers all the 500 kashas. Even though the idea cannot be true, right? But it sits more comfortably on the mind because now you have only one thing bothering you instead of 500, right? It's a trick. Very far from the truth, but very impressive, very comfortable. The type of mind that we have as a result of the Eitz Hadas Tovra, we don't see truth. So how do we prefer one theory over another, one idea over another? It's very sad. It could be that people just make all their decisions in life just based on just what's more comfortable, not necessarily what's really right or really wrong.
It works, but it's mathematically, it works out mathematically, what Einstein said. It's true, there's no central theory between quantum mechanics and general theory.
Right.
But his theory
doesn't work out. No, I'm just saying, I'll just give an example, right.
It can't be just plain pure comfortable. There's got to be a mathematical basis. There's got to be some kind of truth.
Yeah, fine, but it could be.
We're missing. We're obviously missing something because it's not the whole story.
That's right. I'm just saying that, you know, ideas have been rejected and others preferred, and it's got nothing to do with really knowing the truth, right? Yeah, these were. We suddenly became uncomfortable with this. So now this is more comfortable. It's all Noach, and that's the way the human mind works. That the Das Tovara that we got is right, doesn't really see the truth itself. Right?
I see.
Right?
So we go with what makes us feel comfortable, is what you're saying?
Yes. There's also mental and emotional comfort.
Right.
Not just physical comfort, mental and emotional comfort. It's less complicated. Yeah.
What
they call, you know, catchy ideas, you know.
Would Occam's razor fall into that category?
What?
Would Occam's razor fall into that category?
Who?
Occam's razor.
I don't
that
know.
That when there's a choice of, it could be A, B, and C, you choose the one that's the most elegant and the least complex.
Yes, that's correct. Because that more elegant and least complex may not be more true. Right? May not be more true. Right? But our Torah, we believe, is the truth, not just comfortable. Right? Part of the failure of, you know, I'll say this, someone, it should be said at least once, you know, as politically incorrect as it is, right? We give our kids everything, and they still go off the derech, right? That's the fundamental mistake being made. Torah is not about comfort. We try to build up the frum lifestyle that it's a very comfortable lifestyle. It's not about comfort. It's about truth. And until a person understands that you're in it because it's the truth, there's not going to be any dedication. Because it's all about comfort and pleasure. Pleasure being a form of comfort. And no one's going to stick with it. You know, the second something else comes up.
Or the second one becomes uncomfortable.
Yeah. All right.
Well, that's like the. That's why Adam told his children not to marry the Canaanim, because they went with what was comfortable.
All right. It's about the truth. It's about the truth. So now that's something that the Torah takes us to. Also, it's going to get us out of the Das Tovara. Mm-hmm. Right. It's going to get us, and it's going to bring us to the unmitigated truth. And when it does, it will bring us. Called that took us from the Eitz Tzatzor to the Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim Mila Machazikim Ba. It will bring us back to the truth, and when we get back to the truth, we'll be back to life. But here's the thing, getting back to what they were talking about, right, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they wanted to know, can we understand, when they talk about Noach, they talk about human thought, they had a machlokas, can man, mortal man, understand that he is here for his own good? Answer is no. Answer is no. Mortal man, even though, of course you're here for your own good, of course. Akash, who created us to bestow goodness. Can mortal man really, not just say it, but everyone just says it, Gamzu Latova, right? And then, in public, then they cuss their head off, when no one's watching, right? Can mortal man seriously get his head around it that he is here for his own good? No. Mortal man cannot get his head around it. Not possible. Not possible. Because the truth is, as the Masil Shrom speaks at the, first essay in the Masil Shrom, right? No mortal man could think that God did him any favors by putting him in this world. Right? Yeah, so of course, what we got to say is that there's got to be something else called Olam Haba. And he goes through this world, the pain far outweighs the pleasure. Yeah, well, goes through it over there. It's pretty depressing. Can't seriously believe you're created for this world. It's got to be something else, somewhere else. All right, so that's what I think. The Dan of Machlokas, can man understand that the answer, he can't. But let's talk about the mortal mentality that works on the basis of Noach. Can you be comfortable with the idea that you're here for your own good? No, you cannot be comfortable with that idea. It's something that's not part of the regular dat enoshit, human intelligence. It's from das Torah. The Torah gave us that idea. And the Torah, maybe to the extent that we're connected with the Torah, we could get real with that idea. That's what it means. Right? And we believe that the Torah is gradually working us in that direction, working us and working destiny in that direction where, the evil is being pushed out of reality, and ultimately at the end of time we'll be left only with the good, without the bad, and in human situation that'll be Tchias HaMesim, resurrected only with good matter, not with the bad matter, and that's Olam Haba, that's where everything is truly, really good, and everything is truly pleasurable, and that's when there will be no questions and mysteries anymore, because the bad that interferes with our minds and bars us from seeing the truth and getting the clarity, right? All those, that will all be removed, right?
Why is the Ben Gilbert's essay going to be the one that's improved?
Okay, fine. I'm getting to that point right now. Right, exactly. Right. So in all one famous Gemara, everyone's heard. Hama min ha-Torah minayin ha-min ha-Eitz. Very interesting Gemara in Chulin, looking for allusions to the characters of Purim, but that's right after the Gemara first asked Moshe min ha-Torah minayin. I want to see an allusion to Moshe Rabbeinu even before he was born. So the Gemara says, Bishagam u-Basar, by the Gzera of the Mabel, Bishagam, for he is flesh. Bishagam is Gematria Moshe. Right? So it found an allusion for Moshe, and then it looks and goes straight from Moshe to the characters of Purim. Haman min ha-Torah minayin, Mordechai min ha-Torah minayin, Esther min ha-Torah minayin. From Moshe to the characters of Purim, looking for allusions to them in the Chumash. It's very interesting. Moshe with the character, as if, you know, Moshe and Purim. Right? Shavuos and Purim. Right? Because Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the unmitigated truth, which will, and he gave us the Torah, which will drag us, if we stick with the Torah, it will pull us up and it will redeem us and will get us out of the sin of Adam. It will get us out of the Chet Ego and it will bring us to clarity. Right? And Purim seems to be the complement, a complement on that process. Right? A, you know, finish it off. Because as it says, immediately after Moshe Rabbeinu min HaTorah Minayin, Hama min HaTorah Minayin. And what does the Gemara say? Ha min ha'etz. Right? Adam, did you eat from the tree? Ha min. Haman. Ha min. Right? Right? The allusion to Haman is from the sin of Adam. Did you eat from the tree? Right? Right? Because Amalek came, Amalek, the nation of falsehood, you know, the media, the fake news, right? The, naturally, that's the power of, Gemara says, that's Yerushalmi. I said, no, it's a Babli. You know, no one could speak Lashon Hara like Haman. It's a master of it, you know, fake news. Right?
Lashon Hara or Sheker?
Yeah, we said, you know, what's raw about the Lashon Hara is the negative spin that you put on it. Right. The,
Well, it's a shame,
right? Right. When man went from, got defiled, so as we learned, and we're going to, Nefesh HaChaim is going to have a long piece on this, it was called that the evil which was on the outside infiltrated reality. And Amalek is a nation that should have never come into existence whatsoever. It's really because evil, which is just a theory, right, infiltrated reality and took on a body, which became Amalek. Right? It's the pure evil. Right? And you know, there's nothing more evil than doubt. Than doubt. You know, that's, you know, because when you're nebulous, right, you're not taking a solid position. If you take a solid position, you could show how that position is either true or false. What if you play both sides of the issue? Like any politician. Except Donald, right? Right? That's how you get away with things. You know, it's VMO like this, VMO like that, you know. Yeah, that's how you get away with things. No one could call you on anything. Because even if you at least say a concrete falsehood, you could be called out on it. Because it doesn't stim. Right? Keep, you know. Right? Amalek is Gematria Suffolk. And that's why the allusion to him is, Adam, did you? Adam, got him, you know, this was the invention of doubt. Did you eat from the tree? No, give me a little. God showing, look what you did. Now there are doubts. It's either truth or falsehood. Either, right? Doubt is when it's, you know, it's, there's confusion. You can't call it out. You can't call it out. Amalek thrives on confusion. Not concrete falsehood is that's too good for Amalek. That's too good for him. Concrete falsehood, because concrete falsehood could be analyzed, measured up, and shown to be false. No, the falsehood that, you know, endures is confusion. Right? And that's what we got from the sin of Adam, confusion. Right? And, you know, the Torah takes us out of the confusion. But a mortal mind can't think its way out of confusion, because we're only looking at upside versus downside, not, we don't think in absolutes. What's more comfortable, what's less comfortable. Right? Which means, right. Which means the real antidote, the real anti of Amalek is the Torah. And that's why, by no coincidence, in the very first war of against Amalek, Moshe Rabbeinu was very involved. Hands up, Am Yisrael wins. Hands down. Right? So now here's the question. If that was so necessary back then, where is he now when we need him? In the Milchama Lashem Ba'Amalek Midor Dor, we fight Amalek in every generation. Where's Moshe Rabbeinu? The Torah. The Torah is what fulfills, because that was before Matan Torah, right? The Torah fulfills that role. The clarity that we get from the Torah and from Shabbos, we'll discuss this, you know, of course, Shabbos Zohar, right? The clarity that we get from the Torah and that we get from Shabbos, right? These things are, they are what, you know, they play the role of Moshe Rabbeinu, the clarity. He gives it, with clarity, you fight Amalek.
Can I ask you a question?
No, not really. No, I want to finish. Right, afterwards. Right? Nothing personal. I just got to finish. The clarity. right? You know, that's because Amalek is confusion. Moshe Rabbeinu gives us clarity. And, you know, and the Torah that he gave us, and the Torah stands in his stead in every generation and generation. That's why it's no coincidence. Purim, Mechias Amalek, we re-accepted the Torah. Right? But here's the catch, right? That on Purim we reach the cutting edge of Torah, because Torah ultimately will bring us to the total clarity, right? And we'll have no more questions. Right? The major question that all questions branch out from is the existence of evil. Everything tzaddik v'ralo and existence of evil is the core issue that all the different questions that people have branch out from. Right, and on the day when Amalek is removed from the world, you know, it's called that we'll have removed the evil from the world, and then we'll understand in retrospect, you know, what the role of evil was, right, and how it was for our own good. But you will only know that when we're out of it, right? Well, so long as you're in it, you can't know. It's, you know, situations around, you can't wrap your head around it. You're in it. You got to be out of it, right? When you're out of it, you'll be able to see, right? And understand how it was all part of the divine plan. And it was all for your own good. And not just say that, but really, you know. And that's what it means. You know the famous halacha, you know, Mechayev inish lebsume bepuraya ad lo yada ben orhamad baruch morchai. We must get a drink. You know, it's, you know, the word besume, you know, to get drunk, you know, literally means in Aramaic to sweeten. Like besamim, fragrance, right? You know, the bitterness of life is, you know, evil. You know, we sweeten the situation, so you don't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai. They're all equally for the good. But it's ad lo yada. You have to be out of your das tovar. You got to be out of your mind, out of your mind, right? Because out of the das tovar, out of the noach, right? And so if you get past das tovar, then you could understand. Yeah, but that's, of course, that's super intelligence. So you have to be out of your conscious intelligence. Right? And that's why Purim has to be on the day after. Because on the 13th, we're still fighting. So you can't, like, seriously be stabbing someone, making war with someone, and still saying he's just an illusion and he's there for my good. You can't be real with that. It's the day after. The day after, looking back. And that's why v'noach barba'asar. Because on the 14th day, the day after, because what during the general year is nochol adam shelo nivra misha nivra, right? You can't be comfortable there. You can't understand what you're doing in the world. You know, it's just hardship and hardship, challenge and challenge, physically and spiritually. But v'noach bar basar. No, on the 14th, right? The day after v'noach, right? Yes, you could be good with it and be comfortable with your place in this world, right? And understand that it's all for your good. All for your good. And even the evil is just there to serve the good and to increase your schar. It's v'noach bar ba'asar. You could really be comfortably placed in the world, but not in your regular mind. To drink a lot and get to that consciousness beyond consciousness. You know, a little bit of a taste of the das Torah that's above the das tovara, which is your regular biochemical consciousness. And that's why Purim is on the day after. Because the real Ikar Simcha of Purim is a breakthrough to the future. To the future. Of when the evil has been eliminated, confusion has been eliminated, having the clarity of Eino Mavav, the clarity that we had by Matan Torah, makes a comeback in Purim. That's why Megillas Esther is like on the same level as Chumash. The clarity that we had under Moshe Rabbeinu makes a comeback, right, on Purim with the Mechias Amalek on the day after you're like past him, right? That's what the pasuk says. V'noach me'oyvein v'argosem. We're resting for our enemies, but we kill our haters. That's said about the 14th. No, because the real Mechias Amalek is the day after, when he's in the past, and you're looking back at him, you see that he was just a pawn of the Hashgacha, and he was really there to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to increase our schar. But you see that the real Mechias Amalek is the day after, looking at him from retrospect. That's when you really did away with him. And put him in perspective that it's v'noach me'aveh, we worship to help. We should have Yeshua's, you know, in this, you know, like by Amim Ahem v'zman hazeh.
Amen.
Can I ask a
question now?
You
want to
continue this Purim? Because it was very...
There's one more Sunday before Purim.